Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Is the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number, of course. When I woke up this morning, I was stunned to see the story that our so-called intelligence agencies have suddenly discovered that Iran halted nuclear arms efforts in 2003. And I said, wait a minute, let me see if I understand this. We have an intelligence service that didn't know that they halted these arms efforts 5 years ago, and suddenly they discovered it. And now we're supposed to believe they're still an intelligence service? I knew it was BS. My instincts told me it was disinformation put out by Democrats. I didn't have the proof, but I have a very, very good ability to understand who's telling what, when, and why. And the reason this came out, and it's in the front page of the New York Times, it's on every network, blah, blah, blah. Bush gets up there and says, basically, that there is no worry from Iran now, but there's worry tomorrow. And the Democrats are all over the media today saying, you see that? We don't have to do anything against Iran. Now, what this is all about is twofold. One is this. The surge in Iraq is working, which is the Democrats' worst nightmare. Because if the surge in Iraq is working, they can't attack Republicans in the next election for having failed in Iraq. So they've immediately shifted ground. And they're saying they're warmongers. They want to go to war with Iran. And innocent Iran is not really developing nuclear arms. You can trust the Hitler of our time. President Ahmadinejad. You can dismiss everything Ahmadinejad has said about killing all the Jews in Israel. And it would be worth it to him to kill all the Jews in Israel and lose half the population of Iran. It would be worth it to him. We should dismiss all of that now. So I saw this right away. And it came out this afternoon that I may be 100% right. Now, I don't have information to prove or disprove my suspicions, but a reasonably intelligent person can figure things out and then try to prove them. By the way, that's how science works. As a PhD-level scientist, I was told as a child that the way experiments were conducted was, well, first you come up with you play around in the lab and you stumble upon some kind of theory, and then you try to prove or disprove that theory. As I developed a mature mind, I found out that's rubbish. The best scientists I ever met told me that it's all intuition. You have an intuitive flash as to what discovery it is you think you're going to make, and then you go about proving it. It's the same with politics. You get an intuitive insight into what's going on, and then you try to prove or disprove it. And I'm telling you right now, this intelligence is faulty. It's generated by the Democrats. Why do I say it? Because an article just came out minutes ago by Kenneth Timmerman, on Newsmax, that's a mind blower. It turns out that this argument that Iran shut down its nuclear weapons program in 2003 is based on a single, unvetted source who provided information to a foreign intelligence service and has not been interviewed directly by the United States. But even worse, this is a deliberate disinformation campaign cooked up by the Iranian Revolutionary Guards, who made up false information, fed it to the United States liberals through Revolutionary Guards intelligence officers posing as senior diplomats in Europe, and the National Intelligence Council, which produced the NIE, is chaired by a man named Thomas Fingar, a State Department intelligence analyst with no known overseas experience, who briefly headed the State Department's Bureau of Intelligence and Research. I am not making this up. These people are traitors and saboteurs, and they're undermining our ability to defend ourselves. They're now in bed with the Iranian Revolutionary Guards. That's my analysis. Now, it's interesting to me that you're only going to read this, for example, on michaelsavage.com, linked from Newsmax. You're not going to see that tomorrow in the Old York Times. And that is because Pinchy Sulzberger, the moron, who inherited a great newspaper from his grandfather and father and is now running it into the garbage can because of his left-wing bias, is an open revolutionary. Pinchy Sulzberger is a billionaire or hundreds of millions, whatever he's worth, that he didn't make on his own. He inherited it all. But the moron would like to live in sandals. He has another headline next to this disingenuous, disinformational headline about Iran that gives him away. It says, Venezuela vote sets roadblocks on Chavez path. Revolution hits limit. They're on his side, for God's sakes. The New York Times is an open revolutionary newspaper. Forget liberal. Forget liberal. It is an open revolutionary Marxist Bolshevik sheet. Don't you see this? Now, on my story is getting bigger by the day. I'm finally getting people on my side in the media. The most important stories that came out on WorldNet Daily by Joseph Farah. God bless him. And you've got to read every one of them. I implore you, even if you're too cheap, to send $10, which most of you are. I know many of you like to talk about the good fight, but you're not there with anyone when anyone needs you. I understand human nature. Trust me. You'd rather blow $50 in Atlantic City than send $5 to a defense fund that can make all the difference in free speech. I know how human beings are. Everyone gives you the blowhard. Hey, Mike, I'm with you. Mike, I'm a conservative. Try to get 5 cents out of them. That's human nature, though. I mean, I accept it. Joe Farah, though, has written two great articles. He'll join us within this hour. And the best article is, well, there's three of them that I linked up on my site. They're the best articles out there. Joe says, I'm proud of my friend and colleague Michael Savage today for standing up against the Council on American-Islamic Relations. I'm here to endorse his lawsuit and offer any help he needs in combating. He'll be with us. Another article is very important for you to read, which is Farah to discuss care with Savage organizations, campaign targets, popular radio shows, advertisers. But the most important is CARE called a turnstile for terrorist suspects. And who's calling CAIR a turnstile for terrorist subjects? Is it me? No. Is it Joe Farah? No. It's an FBI agent. A man in counterintelligence who knows what's going on. Read the article. Read the article, please. Download the article, please. Judge for yourself, please. Don't believe the Associated pukes. They'll stab you in the back every time. And for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about and only like the sound of my voice because you're very much sort of like the RCA Victor poster. The picture of me with my dog Teddy is actually on the website, so maybe I can get you to look at that. And I got to thank a few other people, by the way. I'll tell you who else I have to thank. I have to thank a young lady on Fox News who I had a call from a friend at like 10 to 9. I was sleeping, 8:40. I don't get up 12 hours before my work day. You know, I mean, I won't deceive you. I don't get up 4 in the morning to look at the news. I'm a late sleeper because I start, you know, late in the day. I don't like to go off so early in the morning that I'm dead by the time the show starts. Ring, ring, cell phone, ring, ring, ring. Hey, Mike, you got to see Fox. They're running a great story about you with two lawyers, and they're both on your side. I click it on, and there's a young lady. What's the lady's name, Beowulf? I don't have it here. Please put it on the screen. Megyn Kelly, God bless her. She was able to break the logjam. She was able to break free of the headlock of the leprechaun on Fox News. She has more balls. She has more guts than Wallbanger and Leprechaun put together. Let me tell you, it's the women who are going to save this country because the women know the danger we're in, number one, and the women understand the truth better than the men. And number three, the women don't engage in a pee contest with other men. Women understand what's at stake better than the men. You know, the Leprechaun, I understand, probably went to Blarney Stone last night. He got in late. And he was bleary-eyed, so she was able to get away with a piece in the morning before he woke up. He probably also doesn't get up 12 hours before his shift. So she figured at 8:30 in the morning she could get one in out on Fox News Network. Very good, Miss Kelly. Thank you very much. It was really good. And I don't know how she got it in there. I don't know. The leprechaun might fire her now. You never know. I mean, this guy, Bigfoot there, the Bigfoot leprechaun, he doesn't like anything to do with anyone but him. That's what I think. So there it is. And by the way, go on to michaelsavage.com to get these stories. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Here's another little story for you who think that the poor Muslims in America are victims of hate crimes. The article is from the IB, the editorials, the investorsbusinessdailyeditorials.com. Headline, hyping hate crime versus Muslims. It turns out that hate crimes against Muslims, despite all of the protestations to the contrary by CAIR, have plummeted. And the largest recipients of hate crimes in America are Jews. The largest recipient of hate crimes by religious motivation in 2006, according to FBI data, not Hezbollah data, is the Jewish people. And would you believe it that anti-Protestant hate crimes and anti-Catholic hate crimes exist? You wouldn't know that, would you? You'd think only Muslims are troubled by religious bigots. Oh, well, the data doesn't support that. 1-800-449-8255. Please go onto my website, michaelsavage.com. And for God's sakes, understand that this battle must be won at all costs. This lawsuit was not filed for frivolous reasons. This lawsuit was not filed for publicity. This lawsuit was filed for the First Amendment and to defend your freedoms as well. I'll be back. Savage. I'm looking at a picture of myself with my dog, Teddy, that the Associated Press took yesterday. You got to click on michaelsavage.com and then blow up the picture. It's a nice picture. Teddy looks so smart, that little poodle. You know what? The thing about dogs that I love is that whatever mood you're in, they're in. I try to look intelligent. He tries to look intelligent. I feel depressed. He looks depressed. They look at your face and copy you. If you look worried, they look worried. Such mimics. That's why we love them. You know, we anthropomorphize our animals. It's fabulous. But look how noble he looks there. I mean, you know, I look great. I look fabulous in that picture. Very leonine. So does he now. He sees me looking leonine. He looks leonine. Ah, that's the beautiful thing about dogs. That's why we all love them. They're such characters. So 1-800-449-8255. This Iran thing is really amazing to me. I just got to tell you, could you play the Fox thing? How much? We got 5 minutes. It'll blow out the whole segment. No, save it. Oh, people have been calling in, begging for the address to mail donations who don't go on the internet. A lot of people, believe it or not, want to mail donations. You send it to the trust account of Daniel Horowitz, P.O. Box 1547, Lafayette, California, 94549. I'll read it only one more time. Trust account of Daniel Horowitz, P.O. Box 1547, Lafayette, California, 94549. You can send checks, cash, money orders, if you wish. It goes right into a trust account. I don't see it. I don't touch it. I mean, I will know how much there is. And that's it. Anyway, I have received, I think, about 1,700 donations thus far. It's a long way from the 28 million who have voted on my website. It 35 million voters? We passed the 35 million vote mark? What if every one of them sent a dollar? We'd have some war chest. And I want to tell you something. After I win this lawsuit, or we settle it, and we become friends, me and CAIR, because my goal, by the way, is to make them into my friends and make them understand that both Daniel and I are not really who they have projected us to be. Maybe they have mistaken who we are. They don't need any more enemies than they already have, and I'm a talk show host. I'm not a politician. After we win this lawsuit, or it is resolved to our satisfaction, if there is any money left over, I am talking about creating a conservative legal group that will become the antidote to the ACLU. It depends upon how much we get, but I'm dead serious about this. You know, if I had a grant like the ACLU of $8 million. Their single largest donation to the ACLU is $7.5 million from liberals from New York City. Would you believe it? One family gave them $7.5 million to undermine family, to undermine religion, to undermine America, to undermine the military, to undermine the cross, to undermine everything you believe in. And they think they're doing good. They're duped. But what if I had someone out there who gave me a lot of money? You think it would go in my pocket? You're wrong. It would go into this new think tank that I'm going to create. And so don't worry about it. This money will be put to good use. It's as simple as that. But let's go back to the big story. The same day that this information comes out about Iran, U.S. finding says Iran halted nuclear arms effort in 03. Wait a minute. Intelligence agencies that didn't know they halted it in 03 are now intelligent enough for us to believe them? Listen to what I said this morning when I read this and called into the syndication company and recorded it this morning. This is what I call coffee talk. Listen.
The Bush administration suddenly discovered, quote unquote, discovered that Iran has not been pursuing nuclear weapons since 2003, exclamation point. So now the intelligence service, so-called, discovers this after 5 years and was supposed to believe that now this intelligence is intelligent? I don't buy it. I believe Bush has thrown Israel under the bus because Israel did not behave well at the so-called Annapolis Peace Conference, which he set up in order to make himself look good. Israel refused to commit national suicide for Bush's so-called legacy. The very next day, Bush suddenly discovers through his so-called national intelligence apparatus that Iran has not developed nuclear weapons and can't, and has not been able to, and discontinued the program since 2003. Well, I ask you, how did they discover that overnight? And who has leaked this all of a sudden? And who are these intelligence agents? And who is this intelligence service? And who is Stephen Hadley? And why suddenly the reversal? Answer, because Bush, once again, has stabbed an ally in the back.
Well, that was one theory. And, of course, later in the day, it came out on Newsmax, as I mentioned, by Kenneth Timmerman, that the one source for all of this rubbish is a disinformation campaign cooked up by the Revolutionary Guards in Iran, took the fake information, fed it to the United States pacifist socialist Democrats through Revolutionary Guards intelligence officers posing as diplomats in Europe. It was eaten up by a single man named John Fingar, who briefly headed the State Department's Bureau of Intelligence and has no overseas experience. Now, why should we believe this politically correct view held by Fingar? And all of a sudden, it's the same day in the New York Times. It is absolute. We're living through the ex-Soviet Union. And Michael Savage, God bless him, whoever he may be, in 1998 gave a seminal speech at the Commonwealth Club. That Savage said, beware the government media complex. God bless Michael Savage. He wrote that in 1998, and he gave that speech at the Commentary Club. Some of you, what's the club? Commonwealth Club. Joe Farah next on the Savage Nation. Be here.
Savage.
Back to the Savage Nation. I'm in the battle for my professional life right now, and many of you know that. Some of you jerks don't really know what's going on, and you think everything's a publicity stunt. And that's because you're disconnected from reality. You know, you think Iran is not dangerous. You think that the neocons have invented the threat of Islamofascism. And you think that everything's a joke because you live in a jokester's world. But a very serious gentleman by the name of Joe Farah owns a website called WorldNet Daily, which I've enjoyed for all the years it's been on the net. And he has written a series of articles today about CAIR, my antagonist. And believe me, they started this fight. I didn't. I got to repeat this before Joe comes on the show. I want to get the record straight. Over the years, I've read about CAIR, and I didn't like what I read, but I figured, you know what? I don't know if it's true or not. They can go about their merry business. They have a right to be in existence. I may not like their message. They don't like mine. But c'est la vie, it's a free country. But they weren't happy to live and let live, were they? They decided to try to destroy the Michael Savage program, advertiser by advertiser. And so, therefore, I filed a lawsuit to defend myself and to defend my professional life. That's the genesis of this entire controversy. And I've also learned who my friends are. One of my best friends is Joe Farah, who I'm proud to have on the Savage Nation. Joe, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Michael. That's music to my ears. I know how you feel with this fight. I know exactly how you feel because today, with WorldNet Daily coming out with this amazing report, which shocked even me, and I've been researching this group, CAIR, for at least 10 years. I was astonished when we put it together, you know, because for years we've been sort of recycling the same nut graphs and the stories about three of the officials who, you know, have been sentenced for various terrorist-related crimes and so forth. But we decided, you know, in light of your case, to go back and take another investigative look at what this group is all about. And to our astonishment, Michael, we found that it was no longer three officials who've been linked with terrorism and convicted of crimes, but 14 officials of the Council on American Islamic Relations, now with proven ties to terrorism. I got to ask the American people a question. How many ties do we have to see in a group like this before we do something about it, before we, you know, get them off the airwaves and stop using them as the go-to group for the media when they want to hear the Muslim point of view and so forth and so on?
Well, Joe, you say that you found out that 14 former officials of CARE have been indicted, imprisoned, or deported from the U.S. You did this how? How did you find this out?
Michael, the astonishing thing is, we started this investigation last Friday, and again, it was in the wake of your lawsuit. I mean, we didn't spend weeks doing this. I think this is one of the biggest stories World Net Daily has ever broken, to be quite honest with you. And yet, it was superficial reporting, really, that enabled us to find it. This was out there for any news agency in the world. All we did was look at public documents, criminal court documents, 990 tax records, Federal Election Commission records, stuff, most of it is available on the Internet. And yet no news...
So you did the job that most so-called journalists refuse to do about who this group is. And the shame here, Joe, is that some of my advertisers have been duped by this organization.
I know it. I know it. Big advertisers. Big advertisers have left the Michael Savage Show because a bunch of bullies with terrorist ties, and by the way, you know the group CARE, this is in the story as well, is itself an unindicted co-conspirator believed to have tried to contribute $12 million to Hamas, a terrorist organization, according to our own State Department.
Unbelievable. Well, why would any company want to be in bed with them? Why? Why would any company want to be in bed with this group instead of staying with my show? It's amazing to me. But let's not talk about the advertisers. Your story, CARE Called Turnstile for Terrorist Suspects, is based upon federal criminal court documents, past IRS 990 tax records, and FEC records. You did something no one else in the media has done, Joe.
Yeah, we scratched the surface of this group. I'm telling you, Michael, there's no telling what we might find if we had the resources, which is what I love about your lawsuit, because you know there's nothing like a court case to get to the bottom of who...
Well, the problem, Joe, is this. They have unlimited money. Did you find out how much money an Arab government gave them last year? Is it $24 million, as we heard?
I believe that is true. Michael, they were trying to transfer $12 million to Hamas. This is CARE. CARE had $12 million they were trying to funnel into Hamas. Now, that tells me their budget is pretty big. If you got $12 million to throw around.
So we need to raise a lot of money, Joe. I mean, this fight's going to be very expensive. I hope that any future article you run, frankly, you can link them up to my donation page, because we're going to need every dollar we can get, but that's a separate story. In another argument, You have another article today, Joe. CARE, Anything But American. Exclusive. Joseph Farah exposes terror-sympathizing ways of group in battle with Savage. Admittedly, those are strong words. What do you mean by terror-sympathizing?
Well, you know, look, I've been following this group for a long time. Michael, do you know I used to debate CARE people like Hooper and his surrogates on television all the time, because, as you know, I'm an Arab-American, and particularly after 9/11, the media was very interested in my point of view, because it's so radically different from what they hear from groups like CARE and so forth. So I was regularly pitted against these guys. And I'll tell you about one specific time on one of the Fox shows where the debate was bloody. I got to tell you, after we were done on the air, the guy from CARE was so upset and so riled up that we took it out into the parking lot. I thought they were going to kill me. I really did. I thought he came unglued. And after that, Michael, never again did I ever get an opportunity to debate CARE. Now, what does that tell you?
Wait a minute, who stopped you? Wait a minute, you see Fox never invited you back after that?
Not Fox, nobody. And
why? Why? You mean they only want the Arab Muslim viewpoint, not the Arab Christian viewpoint?
No, here's what happened. After they got humiliated by me on the air that night, they made it a point, who are we going to debate with? It's not going to be Farah. So therefore, what happened was CARE...
Oh, so they told the people, don't ever have Farah on or we won't go on.
So CARE stopped, you know, they get to choose who they have their fight with.
It's that Bedouin blood, Joe, you know, it's tough stuff.
but again, it shows you the power, the clout of this group. I think one of the reasons the media turn to them so often is because they are so available. Because, you know, they're the easy choice to make. Oh, we want to hear what the Muslims think, so we go get Ibrahim Hooper.
Before we go on, you write the end of the article, it's time to choose sides in this fight. Do you support the right of one of America's most popular radio talk show hosts to air his unadulterated views? Or do you support the brown shirt tactics of those who want to Islamicize the United States of America? And once you've chosen sides, you say, chosen sides, put your money where your mouth is. Oh, it does go to the lawsuit. Oh, my God, I take it back. Yeah, that's really amazing, Joe. You've already done it. So, Joe, who is Ibrahim Hooper? Ibrahim Hooper, who is this man who always speaks for CARE?
The funny thing is because he is the least likely guy you would imagine. First of all, he's a convert to Islam. He's got blonde hair and blue eyes. An American who changed his name to Ibrahim, so he'd be taken seriously, I guess, in Islamic circles. But he is a true believer. You know, an absolute.
He's a convert from which religion, if any? Do you know?
No earthly. I'd probably, you know, the American version of secular humanism, I can only imagine.
Well, there's no greater believer than a neophyte in any religion. That's a fact of reality. But I have no problem with people practicing their religion. But I have found in any religion, those who are newly converted are usually the most zealous. That's what I've discovered. Of course, that's neither here nor there. What is that man's background, though, Mr. Hooper? Does anyone know where he was born, what his background might have been?
Oh, he's an American. I don't know a lot of the specific details. He lives here in the Washington, D.C. area. I can tell you that. He homeschools his children.
I
don't think that I want to venture too far into the personal because...
No, I'd be curious if you ever found out more about this gentleman's origins. If you could publish an article on it, because many Americans need to know or would like to know more about this vocal civil rights activist. Joe, WorldNet Daily, what's gone on since you've published the article?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, because one of the things that I find alarming today, I mentioned to you that I think this is one of the biggest and most important stories we have ever broken in WorldNet Daily in its 10-year history. And I got to tell you, I'm frankly surprised and alarmed that it is not, frankly, dominating the news today. I'm surprised and disappointed that...
Joe, you know why that is? The reason is me. You have to understand, in the new Stalinist news media, I am persona non grata, and the way the Stalinists operate is you don't mention those who you cast out of the fold. And so, by the way, I'm shocked that I got any coverage at all, Joe. And I don't want to play martyr here, but you know that there was a Fox News story this morning by a young lady. No one else on Fox had the courage to cover this story, even though it's intimately involved in their life, intimately involved in Fox News, Fox Radio, Fox TV. Nobody covered it, but about early in the morning, one of the morning shows did it. A young lady did it. She's the only one who covered this story with two lawyers on, by the way, Joe. And you want to hear the good news? Lawyers on both sides said that I have a viable and excellent case to pursue. Both lawyers, neither of them said the case is bad. Both lawyers said it's good.
That is really good news. Really good, because this is an important case, Michael, and I really do want to urge everybody listening to you tonight to get involved in this thing, to really stand behind you, and that means contributing money. It means, you know, $5, $10, whatever it is, go to your website and support this. Because this is a battle. It's not your battle, Michael. It's a battle for the First Amendment. It's a battle for truth and justice and all those good things we all need here in America.
Well, you've been fighting the battle from the beginning, Joe, on WorldNet Daily, and people don't know that you and I, You, with your imprint, your books, your WND books, were involved in my first three bestsellers in political books, The Savage Nation, 13 weeks on the New York Times list, The Enemy Within, about 7 weeks on the list, and then Liberalism is a Mental Disorder. All of those were published by you, weren't they?
Yep.
And then when you weren't involved, the fourth book came along, which is really a great book, The Political Zoo, but it didn't do as well, Joe. I need to go back to WND again.
I tried to tell you, but you didn't listen to me.
And there's another little secret we should share with everyone, which is that Joe invited me on his great cruise coming up in a couple of weeks, and now I'm sorry I didn't go. Joe, you know what? Plug it. Tell us what you're doing.
It's no point because it's a sellout. We only have waiting list left. And instead of sitting in for Michael Savage will be G. Gordon Liddy.
You gave him my cabin, my 1,200 square foot cabin?
He'll be in your penthouse.
Well, I'm sorry we didn't take you up on this opportunity, but somebody else will enjoy that trip. I'm so happy you sold that out. I recommend that everybody go on to the WorldNet Daily website directly and or go to michaelsavage.com. Read it. Very important. If you don't know who I am or what this is about, if you don't know which opinion to have on this, why don't you read the facts instead of reading Associated Press? Joe, are there any last words?
Well, just that this story is important because it really lays out how dangerous this group is. Michael, it astonished even me, and as you know, I've been involved in debating this group and covering them for 10 years, and this blew me away. And so,
I tell you what we should do, Joe. Stay on the line, Joe Farah. I'm going to open it up to a few calls for a few minutes for Joe. Direct questions to Joe Farah of WorldNet Daily right here on the Savage Nation phone number, 1-800-449-8255. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We're talking about two major topics today, and the bigger one is the Iranian issue, which is that a single source, an unimportant source, a made-up source, fed from the Iranian Revolutionary Guards itself, has said, Iran halted nuclear arms effort in 2003, and we're supposed to believe the intelligence agencies who didn't know this for 5 years? It's rubbish. And I think it's coming right from the Hillary Clinton campaign in order to make up for the fact that the surge is working in Iraq. And they don't have a good case against the Republicans on that issue, so they'll make up another one, which is that the Republicans are warmongers. We really don't need any battle with Iran. And this is so dangerous. I know Iran is laughing at the United States, just as CAIR is laughing at me, because they think that the courts will throw the case out. We have with the audience today, Joe Farah of WorldNet Daily, a good friend of the freedoms of that this country offers all of us. That includes me and CAIR. Joe Farah, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Michael. Appreciate the opportunity.
Joe, I just got an email from a listener who went on to a website and found Abraham Hooper's background. He was a news reporter for an affiliate of ABC in Minneapolis. Would you believe this in the 80s? With a master's degree in journalism and mass communications. It looks to me like he's just jealous that he doesn't have a radio show.
Well, you know, Hooper's title with CARE is actually communications director, so I guess that makes some sense. He's putting his communication skills to work for him.
Yeah, well, I think it's just the guy who wishes he had a good talk show, but we'll find out soon enough. We have a few callers for you. Daniel, on WOR in New York, go ahead. What do you have for Joe Farah?
Mr. Farah, I'm from Staten Island. What can I do to help in the defense of Michael Savage? This is the most important thing in my lifetime, and I'm shocked at what I've been hearing for weeks and weeks, and I want to contact as many people as I can. I work 96 hours a week, so what can I do from Staten Island, New York?
Things, as far as I'm concerned, one is to contribute money to his fund at his website, michaelsavage.com. And the other one, I think, that I haven't heard Michael mention too often, but I think it's a good idea, is to contact these advertisers that are dropping off. Send them a copy of this article in WorldNet Daily today. Send them the hyperlink to this expose on CARE, and show them who it is that he's.
That's interesting. In other words, just hyperlink it to direct. I would send it to the CEO of these companies. Don't go to some lowly serf who doesn't really know what's going on. That's a great idea. Next caller, please. Fort Lauderdale, Judah on WFTL. You're on the air.
Yes. Mr. Farah, I'm wondering about the Saudi interest in Fox News vis-a-vis CARE. And let me be specific. Al-Tawim bin Talal is the man I'm referring to, the Saudi. Several years ago, he held a fundraiser, and he contributed of his personal wealth, fundraiser for the families of suicide bombers. And I'm wondering...
We're a little mixed up, Judah. What are you saying? The Saudis are invested in Fox News?
Well, yes, they most definitely are.
Joe, you want to respond to that? We only have a minute and a half.
Yeah, he's right. There is Saudi investment in Murdoch's News Corp. But, you know, I don't know what the question is. We know that News Corp, we know that the Fox News channel is not real news. So, you know, what are we worried about? You listen to the Michael Savage show, read WorldNet Daily if you want to know what's going on in the world.
Well, I got to thank that young lady who had the piece on this morning, Joe. We're going to play it in the next hour on the lawsuit. She's the only one who broke free of the headlock of the leprechaun. Well, Joe, what are you leaving on your cruise?
January 6th, I believe, is our departure. And, Michael, I want to tell you one other thing about tomorrow's column by me.
Okay.
WorldNet Daily. Yeah. It's a follow-up to this. And it is specifically on the issue. You know, CARE is all upset because you called the Quran a book of hate, supposedly. And what I did was I decided, well, I think it's a book of hate, too. And so I went into the Quran and I excerpted dozens and dozens and dozens of verses from the Quran and the Hadith.
Oh my God, you actually went and looked for the statements that say cut the infidel's throat?
Yeah.
Jews are descended from monkeys and pigs? You found such sutras in the Quran?
And so if you read my column tomorrow, I want people to make up their own.
Oh my God, Joe, I was waiting for somebody to actually do the research. You mean it may turn out that some people are actually right?
It is, if it isn't a book of hate, then there is no such thing as a book of hate. Because
you know, I don't know of any other religion that has as its Bible. I know that there are violent phrases in the Old Testament, but it really doesn't talk in disparaging terms of other religions, Joe. God bless you, man. Thank you so much.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Rock and Roll Tuesday on the Savage Nation. A little Frankie Lyman to kick off the hour. The secret code to all of my agents around America. I want you to listen to every third word. Take the first letter. Reverse them. Put them upside down. Put lemon juice on them. And have a drink. Squeeze them into a cocktail and you'll get the message. People are so foolish. They can believe anything. Thanks, Frankie. All right, give him a few chips. We'll see him in the gambling casino later. So Iran. So now we got the entire left wing in this country, the revolutionaries working with the Revolutionary Guard in Iran, saying that Iran halted nuclear arms efforts in 2003. We're supposed to believe the same intelligence schmucks who for 5 years told us that Iran was fastly building a nuclear weapon. Now the same intelligence schmucks are telling us that they were wrong for 5 years, but we should believe them now. You hear this? I don't really know who's running anything. To be honest with you, I don't think anyone's running anything. I think we're a nation like a real morons. And God only help, God help us, because no one else can. God help us with this kind of leadership. With the government media complex so deeply embedded to destroy this country, I don't know how we can go on. 1-800-449-8255 is the number for you to reach the Savage Nation. And as I say, a friend of mine called me early in the morning, and I ring, ring. I should have shut the cell phone off. And he says, Michael, they're covering your thing on Fox News. I said, this can't be true because, you know, the leprechaun has him in a headlock. They're not allowed to cover Michael Savage. It's like the Bolshevik revolution over there. Anyone who does is thrown off the station. Well, it turns out they did. There was a young lady, and you got to give me her name again, Beowulf. I'm very sorry. I don't have it. Huh? Megyn Kelly. Nice name. I never met an Irish person I didn't like to begin with, but what a beautiful name. Megyn Kelly ran this piece this morning on Fox News with two lawyers. Usually it's one lawyer agrees and one lawyer disagrees. I was shocked that both lawyers took my side. Listen to clip three.
Conservative radio talk show host Michael Savage in a brutal battle with an Islamic rights group. The Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE, has targeted Savage, pushing for advertisers to boycott his radio show because of comments like this one.
I'm not going to put my wife in a hijab, and I'm not going to put my daughter in a burqa, and I'm not getting on my all fours and praying to Mecca, and you could drop dead if you don't like it. You could shove it up your pipe. I don't want to hear any more about Islam.
Well, Savage says using random clips from his radio show out of context and in an effort to ruin him is unlawful. So does he actually have a case? Let's ask our panel, defense attorney David Wall and attorney Trish DeAngelis. Good morning.
Good morning, Megan.
Okay, so he is saying, CARE is on an effort to get his show off the air, having advertisers boycott him, and some are actually doing it. He says that material is copyrighted, and he may have some other claims down the pipe as well. What do you say, Trish? Does he actually have a claim?
Yes, he does, Megan. First and foremost, they did take what he said out of context. They didn't get his permission to put such information out there on a website, but I really think that is a very minor point in the grand scheme of things. What they did, Megan, was they went out there and they said that this is what he said, and they went further and said that he's a Muslim hater. Now, if you watch Michael Savage, you know that that is absolutely, it couldn't be further from the truth, Megan. He is very supportive of freedom of religion, and oftentimes indicates that he believes Muslims and Islam they have great family values. And this organization went out there specifically to target him, get the PC police out and take him off the air because they didn't like one thing that he said. But they need to look at it, Megan, in the grand scheme of things. They went out there to specifically target him and harm him. You know, and they didn't go call him up and say, I don't like what you're saying, and debate him on the air. They went out there and intentionally tried to get sponsors pulled from him, and it is harming him. Over $1 million in sponsors have been pulled so far.
David, what about it? Why is not the answer that Michael Savage gets to say what he wants to say, and then CARE gets to rip on him to the extent it wants to rip on him?
You know, Megan, I took the few extra minutes we had because of the press conference to call my friend Dan Horowitz, who represents Michael Savage. Here's the distinction. Picketing a company, boycotting a product, those are legal actions. That's within CARE's freedom of speech. They can do that if they want. If it harms Michael Savage's business, oh, well, too bad. But when they take copyrighted material and they take a snippet of it and they take it out of context unlawfully and they use that to interfere with Michael Savage's prospective business, then that is actionable. That is the basis of this lawsuit. And I think CARE, if they actually did that and took it without authorization, they're going to have a lot of problems. That's not covered by the free speech of the First Amendment.
So you guys are in agreement that if they hadn't used the radio clips, let me ask you, if they had not used the radio clips, would there be a lawsuit? Could Savage sue? Trish?
Well, Megan, I think he could sue because they are going out there and it's a tort. They are intentionally and maliciously, Megan, trying to interfere with his ability to earn a livelihood, to do his business out there.
And the thing
and
that our viewers should know is that this organization, CARE, I mean, David, correct me if I'm wrong, they sue just about anybody who says something derogatory about them that they perceive as derogatory.
Well, they sue or they picket, but remember, picketing an organization or a business or boycotting a product is within their rights. I mean, that's within their free speech rights. If it hurts Michael Savage, I mean, it's the advertisers who pull out. The advertisers could tell CARE to go pound sand. but they choose in it's political expediency, really. They don't want to be picketed. They don't want the negative attention drawn to their product, and that's why they decide to pull out.
But do they, Patricia, should they want to be seen, should these advertisers want to be seen as caving to CARE, an organization that's very controversial? There are reports that it is linked directly to Hamas.
Absolutely, Megan, and that's why it's so shocking to me that so many of these advertisers have pulled out. Other organizations, big companies in the United States have been approached, and I hope that their attorneys take a good look at CARE because it is linked to some really frightening things, Megan.
Yeah, and
I disagree with David. I think there's a difference between going out and picketing and going so far as to write these corporations directly and to put misrepresentations in a letter, and that's exactly what they were doing, using fear to harm Michael Savage.
Understood. We've got to leave it at that because we are out of time. Trish DeAngelis and David Wall, thanks so much. One quick final word for our viewers. CARE does sue just about anyone who says anything derogatory about it, refusing to acknowledge people's right to their own opinions about CARE. In case after case, those lawsuits have been dismissed. Given that, it is ironic for CARE here to be citing free speech rights to defend its attacks on Michael Savage. How the underlying case will turn out, we'll have to wait and see.
Megyn Kelly, you are unbelievable. You should be the lead anchor on Fox News. You're unbelievable. Here's a woman who not only had the guts to run the story despite all the internal opposition, which I'm sure she faced, but to actually get lawyers who agreed with me as opposed to lawyers who would have tried to undermine me, and then to add an editorial at the end about CAIR, it's amazing to me. I don't know Megyn Kelly. I wish I did know her. I'd like to send her a big Christmas present. But I want to thank her, and I want to thank those of you who listened to this just now for hearing my side of the story. Yes, it was taken out of context. Yes, I support Muslims. Yes, I detest Islamists. Yes, I hate Ahmadinejad, the Hitler of our time. Yes, all of those things are true. And the fact of the matter is you cannot use my copyrighted material to try to hang me with it, particularly when you distort what I said. By cutting up sound bites and then making it look as though I said something I didn't say. No, you can't do that. Not in the United States of America. We don't live in the ex-Soviet Union. And this is a case that goes well beyond conservatives or liberals. This is a case that should affect liberals in particular in the arts and entertainment business. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. If you want to help, please do so. Go on to michaelsavage.com and make a donation. I'll be right back. Well, a lot of things are evolving in the country right now. I think people are coming to understand the forces of good and the forces of evil, and they're finding out that these things transcend party affiliation or political orientation, and that there's an awful lot at stake in this nation. I got to tell you, it's wearing on me. I mean, I'd be lying to you if I told you otherwise. I'm not weakened from it. I'm not strengthened by it, but I'm committed to it. You know, after the show, if I go out or I go out before the show and I look at normal people, I look at normal people sitting in a restaurant. I look at normal people going to take their child to a school play. I look at normal people going into a church. I look at normal people sitting in a cafe, and I say, you know what? I don't blame them. I really don't blame them for wanting to go on with their lives as though there's no change in this country, as though it's still 1943 or 46, rather, forever. You know, Jingle Bells, Bing Crosby. I don't blame them at all for wanting to put their head in the sand. In many ways, there's a wisdom to that. Maybe they don't want to see the face of Islamofascism in its many Hydra heads. Maybe they don't want to look it in the eye, even though they may know it's out there. Maybe they figure, you know what, I'll deal with it when it comes to my doorstep. It is the same human emotions, the same human emotion, really, that was operational both in Britain and the United States all through the 1930s. While Hitler was building weaponry to reach the United States, he had front groups such as the German-American Bund promulgating propaganda to the extent that Germany loved America. Hitler was a friend of America. Hitler meant no harm to America. This was while he was trying to build the Super America bomber, which could reach New York and drop major weaponry on Manhattan. It is going on right now. Only right now, with Iran, for example, as we read today with this blockbuster lie, that Iran halted nuclear arms efforts in 2003 after being told for 5 years they've been working around the clock to develop a nuclear weapon. Now suddenly they stopped, or they couldn't do it for 5 years? Now we have an enemy within that is so gross and so grand and so large and so powerful that they think they can simply change a story overnight and hoodwink the American people. Guess what? They may be right. They may be right. It's amazing to me. Los Angeles, Elliot, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, an honor to speak to you again. Okay, first I want to tell all your listeners, they have to get your pass from your broadcaster, because ever since I've gotten this, I don't even watch TV anymore. So, I mean, because so especially LA listeners, if you guys get the Michael Savage pass, you can hear the whole show when you come
on. Wait, what do you mean a Michael Savage pass? What are you referring to?
The yearly pass.
I don't have such a thing. But anyway, go on. I don't even know what that is. Who sells that?
Okay, it's basically the broadcaster that...
We're going to get distracted. What's your main point?
Main point is, I think what's going on in Iran is not what we see it. This is, our country is the same country that tricked the Iranian people the first time to bring the Khomeinis. I think this is a trick. I think by making Ahmadinejad look like he's not developing, or he hasn't done anything since he's come into power, it weakens him. The Iranian people, they wanted this bomb more than anything to counteract Israel's bomb. And the fact that he hasn't done it makes him seem like a weak, weak puppet. This guy's going down. And if he hasn't, and so this forces him...
So now you're alleging that George Bush has a friend in the New York Times?
No, of course. I'm saying all these leaks sometimes aren't always by accident. We've got to give our country some credit. In 1979, they tricked all the Iranian people with amnesty and the BBC into thinking the Shah was a dictator. But instead, they brought Khomeini. The people are really easily manipulated in Iran. As soon as they find out this guy hasn't done anything in 2003, this guy, he hasn't made a bomb since 2003, hasn't been working on it. He's a loser. They're going to kick this guy out. This is the beginning of a revolution.
Okay, it's an interesting theory. I don't have to agree with it. It's an interesting proposal, but I think the opposite's true, Elliot. You're a very clever man. You'd be a very good chess player. You should work in counterintelligence, if only for the fact that your mind is creative not only is your mind creative, but it's able to think, which is very unusual, Elliot. Thanks for listening to the show, and thanks for calling. We now go to Detroit, Michigan. Michael, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I've been listening to you for 7 years. I've been supporting you for just as long. Now, tonight, even before you had Mr. Farah on, and I'm so glad that he did that interview, and that was great, I've already been writing emails, letters to the CEOs of companies, some of which, the ones that have dropped your advertising on your program, some of which I am a customer of. And I was horrified to find out that they dropped you. But I'm already sending emails tonight linking to the article so that these CEOs will know who they're dealing with, and I urge everybody listening to do the same thing.
You're hyperlinking the article on WorldNet Daily Care called Turnstile for Terrorist Suspects.
Yes, that, and also the other article. I'm basically taking excerpts of the two because, you know, people don't read, but hopefully they'll read just enough, and then they'll link and read the full articles. The two articles, Anything But American and the one you just cited as well, yes.
Well, you want to hear something funny? I actually think, pardon me, that at the end of the day, this show will not only not do badly, it'll do better than it ever did. I think that people who were afraid to advertise on the show before, not because they didn't like me, they just don't want controversy, they may decide to join an American patriot. You know, you read the phrase made in America? Well, guess what? Michael Savage was made in America. This show was made in America. These viewpoints are made in America. And if they want to associate with an American radio show, this is it. Or if they'd rather associate with a group that was not made in America, but is funded by foreign sources, and they want to outsource patriotism to Care, go ahead, good luck to you. See if the people buy your garbage. Thanks. Up next, Ken Timmerman. Ken Timmerman has written a blockbuster article on Newsmax today about this Iran disinformation campaign, which I cannot wait to hear about. Because the minute I got up and saw this headline, the Iran couldn't make weapons for 5 years, I knew something was wrong. And Ken posted the article saying that this is all based upon the statement of one ex-State Department official who has no experience on the ground overseas, and I don't doubt it. This is coming from the Hillary Clinton leftist block, as sure as I'm sitting here.
They know that Iraq is working. They know the surge is working. They know people are moving back into Baghdad, and they're terrified that they won't have Iraq as a campaign issue. So now they're going to switch it to Iran, that the Republicans are warmongers and we're the peace lovers. It's going to backfire on them. It's going to backfire on them. We'll hear about it in a minute.
Savage.
We're talking about the disinformation campaign being put out by Iran with a little help from their Democrat friends, saying that Iran halted nuclear arms effort in 2003, which I was shocked to hear about. I didn't believe it for a second. Later today, Kenneth Timmerman published an article, U.S. Intel Possibly Duped by Iran, published on Newsmax. Ken Timmerman, thanks for joining us on the Savage Nation. Who is this character, Fingar, who you mentioned? What has he got to do with all this?
Well, Tom Fingar, and thanks for having me on, Michael. Tom Fingar is the head of the National Intelligence Council, which is actually the organization that writes these national intelligence estimates. And he had worked at the State Department. He's not a long-time intelligence officer. I mean, he doesn't have a long career. He's never been out in the field. He's never been overseas that we know of. He's basically a State Department weenie.
So, in other words, he's like an academic, a pinhead, who is now telling us that Iran is perfectly safe.
That's right. And he's one of the guys who was working with the Senate Democrats in their successful effort to derail the confirmation of John Bolton in the spring of 2005 to become...
Oh, my God. He's one of Bolton's enemies. So he's one of the leftists. I read in your report that in March of 2007, the same character, Fingar, fired his top Cuba and Venezuela analyst, Norman Bailey, because Bailey warned of the growing alliance between Castro and Chavez, and he threw him out?
Yes, that's right. And it's an interesting story because Bailey, again, was one of the last conservatives to get pro-Bush people to get put over at the office of the Director of National Intelligence under John Negroponte, again, another State Department careerist. And Bailey was somebody who was asking the wrong questions. That's what they told him. You're asking the wrong questions. We don't want to hear what you've got to say. You're too inquisitive, and you've got your own sources.
So you're telling me that our so-called intelligence services are nothing but, in essence, grand lobbyists for special interests? They don't really care about intelligence per se. They care about advancing a political agenda. Is that it?
Well, I think there are a lot of very dedicated patriots in our intelligence community, but they're not the people who are writing these reports. This is cherry-picked intelligence. They have pre-cooked, Michael, the political conclusions that they already wanted to get across. And as you read this NIE, at least the part that's been declassified, I mean, it's pretty extraordinary. This is they're making policy judgments here. They say, let me just read you one sentence. They say our assessment that the Iranian nuclear program probably was halted. It was halted primarily in response to international pressure, and this suggests that Iran may be more vulnerable to influence on the issue than we judged previously. So let's move to diplomacy and soft politics.
Well, why would a State Department official, even a liberal, want to downplay the threat from Iran? Do they want them to have a nuclear weapon?
No, I don't. I don't think that they want them to have a nuclear weapon. At least, I certainly hope they don't. I think they sincerely believe that they were burned in Iraq and that they made mistakes with the intelligence on Iraq. And by the way, in my book Shadow Warriors, you'll find that a lot of those intelligence estimates on Iraq, in fact, were right. There was, most of it, there were WMDs in Iraq, and a lot of it was found. But I think in the case of Iran, it's not that they want them to have a nuclear weapon. It's that they don't. They want to prevent the Bush administration from claiming any kind of political victory. They don't want to increase the pressure on Iran, and they essentially would like to sit around a nice, shiny, mahogany table.
Oh, wait a minute. In other words, in order to advance the possibilities of a Democrat winning the presidency, meaning Hillary Clinton, they would rather underestimate the threat from the Hitler of our time? That's their quotient? In other words, it's worth underestimating the threat of a nuclear explosion from Ahmadinejad in order to get Hillary elected. That's their balance sheet?
I think this is incredibly dangerous, and I think that's what they're after, yes.
Well, you know, to me, that's treason. To me, it's treason. I would start an investigation of these guys while Bush is still in power. I would start a hearing immediately, and if this turns out to be true, they should be hung, as far as I'm concerned, at Fort Leavenworth. They should be hung for this.
What kind of world are we living in when we have men who are willing to do this just for political reasons? We are playing with Hitler. Hitler says he's going to get a nuclear weapon. Hitler says he's going to wipe Israel off the map. Hitler is on record saying that it would be worth losing half the Iranian people to see every Jew dead in Israel. Now, how in the world can these people underestimate this man's danger?
It's a very good question, Michael, and I think it's that they just don't believe the Mein Kampf that he's been writing and speaking since 2005 when he took over the presidency in Iran. He's been telling us exactly what his intentions are. He wants to wipe Israel off the map. Every time that they parade their missiles in Tehran, that's what is written across them. Israel must be wiped off the map. And then you have these apologists for Iran, a lot of them in the Democratic Party, a lot of them in the United States Senate, who said, well, you know, it's been mistranslated, we misinterpreted, you mustn't exaggerate. Excuse me, these are big posters in English on those missiles that say Israel must be wiped off the map.
Well, let's put Israel aside for a minute. Many Americans are neutral on Israel or could care less, to be frank with you. What threat does Iran pose to Europe or America should they get nuclear weapons?
Well, let me tell you this first, as a fact. Just last week, the Iranians have announced that they have yet another new missile. This is a two-stage solid fuel missile that can go 2,000 kilometers. And I sat in a briefing today with one of the top missile defense experts in the world, a man named Uzi Rubin, very highly respected in this country, in Europe, and in Israel. And he said, essentially, this technology gives the Iranians the ability to make an intercontinental ballistic missile that they can reach, that they can use to reach the United States. So that's what the Iranians are developing. Now, you tell me they don't have a nuclear weapons capability, but they're building missiles that can hit the United States with some kind of payload? It doesn't make any sense.
Or that they're developing nuclear energy for energy purposes while developing intercontinental ballistic missiles. It does not make sense. I think these people are traitors if what you're telling me is true, and I have no reason to doubt it. And it seems to me a seamless integrated campaign of disinformation, because the very same day that they released this garbage, or the very next morning rather, their old friend Pinchy Sulzberger, the revolutionary in loafers, publishes U.S. findings says Iran halted nuclear arms effort in 03. Now, the first question that came to my mind, Ken, was, wait a minute, the same intelligence sources that thought that they had been on the road to developing nuclear arms for 5 years now suddenly tells us to believe them that they don't have any nuclear arms? Why should we believe them if they were wrong for the last 5 years?
Well, that's a very good question. And what we're being told by the intelligence community is that, in fact, this new estimate is based on a Iranian defector. But as we probe into this a little bit more, it turns out it is a single unvetted source, meaning somebody whose bona fides have not been thoroughly confirmed, and somebody that the U.S. Does not control, somebody who is defected to a foreign intelligence service. You know, the problem here is that the new guy at number two of the CIA, Stephen Kappas, who I write about extensively in Shadow Warriors, this is the man who led the revolt against Portugas, President Bush's nominee to run CIA, the man who led the revolt against reforming the agency and reforming the operations directorate. These are the spies on the ground. This is the guy who is depending on liaison services, in other words, foreign intelligence services, to give the president the advice on what he ought to be doing with Iran.
Well, look, here's a subhead in the New York Times, which says Iran halted nuclear arms in 03. Listen, new take on Iran might stir questions on earlier finding. So they're trying to change the entire findings of the last 5 years now, overnight, because of one person who's a far-left radical who's working, in essence, for the Democrat candidacy?
This is what's so incredible about it. They're going to reinvent history and reinvent the 18 years when Iran had a clandestine program. I mean, that's what's so extraordinary. Here's the narrative as they are telling it. They're saying that in 2003, Iran was found out. They were caught with a clandestine nuclear weapons program. And the Iranians looked around at Iraq and what we were doing in Baghdad, and they said, uh-oh, that's going to happen to us. We'd better clean up our act. So they started to reluctantly cooperate with the International Atomic Energy Agency, reluctantly to allow inspectors to come into some of their facilities. And that part of it is true. They did allow that to happen. But at the same time, every serious analyst I've ever spoken to who has access to intelligence on what's going on inside Iran, as well as my own sources in Iran, tell me, without any doubt whatsoever, Iran has a parallel nuclear program. It is not declared to the IAEA. Those inspectors can't go into those facilities. And if they have 3,000 centrifuges that are today spinning uranium to enrich it in a declared facility that we know about, I guarantee you, Michael, they've got another 3,000 in an undeclared clandestine facility that are spinning that same material to make nuclear.
All right, so this 150-page NIE, National Intelligence Estimate, they're not really a current government program, are they? Who are they? Who is the National Intelligence Council? What is that? What is that group?
The NIC is appointed by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence as the organization over our 16 intelligence organizations in the United States that will cull and sift and weigh and measure all of the various reports that are coming from CIA, that are coming from the Defense Intelligence Agency, that are coming from...
Oh, my God. It seems to me that these agencies have been invaded by moles who may as well be working for the enemy. This is right out of the playbook of the past. Only today it's not the Soviet Union they're working for. They're working, in essence, for the Iranian Revolutionary Guards, but they don't even know it. That's the trick here. I don't even think they understand the danger they're putting this country in by playing footsie with the Iranian Revolutionary Guards in order to advance the possibilities for a Democrat presidency. Ken, last question before we go to break. In your estimation, we certainly could not conduct the ground war against Iran. We don't have the troops. We don't have the resources. But we could conduct a very effective air war against their known nuclear hiding places. Yes or no?
No, and I'll tell you why. Because if we hit the known nuclear hiding places, I guarantee you the real stuff is going to be elsewhere, and they will use it the next morning after that air war begins. I think we have a better policy, Michael, and I've been saying this for a number of years. We should be helping the pro-democracy forces on the ground to get rid of the regime in Tehran, because it's the regime that's the problem, not even the weapons. And you know the irony of this NIE? The people who put out this politically correct National Intelligence Estimate want to say, we should just throw in the towel and negotiate with the regime. What they're saying, though, is no threat, so now we have time to help the pro-democracy movement. They were saying yesterday we didn't have any time. Now we have time, so let's do the right thing, which is to help the people that are of Iran to get rid of this tyranny.
Okay, another last question, because I always have another last question. Israel was just dragged into the so-called Annapolis conference a few days ago. Israel refused to commit national suicide overnight in order to satisfy Bush's legacy and Condoleezza Rice's stupidity. It seems to me the very next day this report was released. Could this be punishment to Israel?
I don't think this is punishment to Israel. However, the subject of the Annapolis conference was not so much Israel and the Palestinians. It was actually Iran. And I've had two conflicting reports. One is that the Bush administration was trying to get support for more aggressive action against Iran. And the other report was just the opposite, that they were trying to get basically to sell this NIE, which says that we should be sitting around the mahogany table and cutting a deal.
It seems like it's the 1930s all over again, Ken. We've got a foolish establishment that's fiddling while the enemy is building war weaponry that could destroy the West. Hitler was doing the same thing, you well know. Hitler was sending out the German-American Bund, saying that Germany meant no harm to America, Hitler was a friend, and while they were doing that, they were building up their military and also trying to build a Super America bomber to deliver as maximum weapon as they could to New York City. It seems like the same thing is going on.
You know, there's that famous passage in Albert Speer's memoirs when he remembers Hitler talking about the burning of Manhattan and watching it go down, the center of capitalism and all those Jews. You're absolutely right, and we should know enough about those historical lessons to see what's going on here in Iran today, because it's the same thing.
Shadow Warriors, The Untold Story of Traitors, Saboteurs, and the Party of Surrender by Kenneth Timmerman. Read his article. It's on Newsmax now. Ken, thanks for being with us in the Savage Nation.
Thanks so much, Michael. It's a pleasure. You're a great American.
I hope I am. The question now is, what am I going to do when I come back? We're going to talk about the intelligence services. We're going to talk about the front groups for terror and how they operate to silence voices in this country who are trying to be the Paul Revere's of our time. And we're going to talk about the U.S. media and how their own self-interest prevents them from joining in this epic battle. I'll be right back. how crazy the world has become and how religion is now being manipulated and utilized by virtually, by so many people. A group of Israeli environmentalists is encouraging Jews around the world to light one less candle tonight, which is the beginning of the Jewish holiday Hanukkah, to help the environment. To help the environment. Well, to help the environment, I guess they can stop reproducing in Israel, too. To help the environment, I suppose people could commit suicide, because think about it. If millions of good environmentalists were to commit suicide, think of the carbon dioxide that would not be emitted over the lifetime of those individuals. In fact, one could even argue that one should forcibly incinerate millions of people because of these savings of the carbon dioxide burden, the savings that the planet would experience. And so perhaps then they can go back to the old drawings of the Third Reich and build the ovens again and put themselves in it this time and say they're doing it for the environment. And that is why I've said to you, liberalism is a mental disorder. It does not matter where it ends. It emanates from the point of insanity. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. Rachel in Des Moines, Iowa is the caller. She's on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, hello, Dr. Savage. Dr. Savage?
Yes, go ahead, please. I never start in with a hello, and you're wonderful. What's on your mind?
I'm sorry about that. Well, I'm a Muslim, and I actually side with you in this suit CARE is bringing against you. I think they're completely out of line doing this. No one organization, especially one as defunct as CARE, can advocate on behalf of an entire religion, especially one as varied and far-flung as Islam. And their attack against you is a blatant violation of First Amendment rights. And it's also an attempt to cover up their own failure to really educate the general public about what Islam is and, you know, the differences between...
Well, to me, an organization that purportedly speaks for a religion should not be so militant. How's that? Does that work? In other words, what you should do, you should practice what you preach. In other words, if I'm not a religious organization, I don't represent a religious organization or a religion. I represent an opinion and opinions. They represent a religion, supposedly. And the best defense for religion is to project peace, not hatred and not warfare. And yet they seem to project hatred and warfare wherever you turn, whether it's the flying imam lawsuit, wherever you turn, they're projecting militancy. Now, that to me is not very good public relations for Islam. Is it, Rachel? Thanks for the call. Sacramento, California. Heidi, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
You know, Michael, I really wish that you would emphasize more to the black community how ignorant they are in thinking that siding with the Islamist extremists is the same as siding with black Muslims of the civil rights movement. It's two different things. And if they're not careful, they're going to see the black women who they hate the most. The black women will be targeted, and they'll be wearing burqas before anybody else unless they stand up and protest against this garbage.
Well, that's quite a mouthful. You know, Heidi, I've said over and over again, it's the women who are going to save this country from this Islamo-fascist onslaught, because it's the women who have most to lose, Heidi. It's the women who have most to lose. The women are treated as slaves, as chattel by these 7th century throwbacks in countries such as Chad or as we saw in the Sudan. Would you want to be a woman in the Sudan, Heidi?
Absolutely not, and I'm not putting on a burqa, so take your Islam and shove it.
Ooh, watch out, Heidi. CARE is listening.
Good.
CARE is listening. Heidi, I want you to march arm in arm with me. What if Michael Savage led a march of black or African-American women who don't want to be put into a burqa? That might be a fun day.
Fine, Michael. I'm walking in the front of the line.
Heidi, God bless you. God bless you. Now, here's something from a woman I lauded earlier. I told you that young lady Kelly on Fox News who dared break the headlock of the leprechaun. I just learned from my good friend Dan that Kelly earned her B.A. in poli-sci from Syracuse, a J.D. from Albany Law, where she also served as editor of the Albany Law Review. So she's got brains, in other words. She's not just a pretty face, unlike the leprechaun.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The song is dedicated to the 72 virgins in heaven. I recently went to it. You can turn it off now. I recently went to an Indian restaurant, a place I like. It's a hole in the wall. Very nice people. So after about a year, I said to the man, I asked him what his religion was. I didn't know if he was Hindu, Muslim. I had no idea. His food is great. And as you know, if you're from India, you can be Muslim or you can be Hindu. Predominantly, it's a Hindu nation today, but there are many Muslims who are of Indian descent, and I never paid attention to it. They're lovely people. So he said to me, we're Sikh. I said, well, are the Sikhs Hindus? And he said, well, not exactly. Okay. And I didn't know. Well, do you believe in heaven and earth? Yes. We believe in reincarnation. I said, okay. You come back as a cat, dog, man, rat. And then I said, of course, you believe that if you are saintly on earth, you don't come back at all. He said, that's right. You spend the rest of eternity with the gods, he said. I said, well, that's not too far off from the monotheistic religions. We just use the same conclusion with the god, with God rather than the gods. But we're close. We're close in terms of human behavior on the earth, and I had a lot of fun. And I said to him, how do you feel about the concept that there are 72 virgins waiting for you in heaven? And he looked at me in a puzzled manner, and he said, he said, I wouldn't look forward to it. He said, I don't know about you. He said, but I couldn't handle 72 virgins. Well, I tell you the truth, it was very funny. I guess you need to have eaten the curry in order to laugh at that one. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I'm just trying to lighten it up a little bit because it's been a long day's night. Let me put it to you that way. Or shall I put it to you another way? Long day's journey in tonight, which is who they got it from. Remember that? There was Eugene O'Neill who wrote Long Day's Journey in Tonight, and then it was the Beatles who... Oh, they wrote It's a Hard Day's Night, which is pretty good, actually a big change. I don't know whether they even read Long Day's Journey in Tonight. But I did, and I also listened to A Hard Day's Night. And right now we're talking about the fact that I am struggling for my professional life. I have filed a lawsuit against a very questionable group called CAIR. And if you just joined the show, we had Joe Farah on from WorldNet Daily. It's a must read. Let's say you don't like me. Let's say you don't like my politics. And you think I'm making this whole thing up about CAIR just for publicity. I'm going to accept that many of you are that stupid and hateful. But I'm going to also hope that you're at least willing to judge for yourself the facts of the situation. And I invite you to please go on to either my website, michaelsavage.com, or WorldNet Daily, and read the article where CAIR is called a, quote, turnstile for terrorist suspects. They reviewed federal criminal court documents, past IRS 990 tax records, federal election commission records, and their conclusions are amazing. Their offices have been a turnstile for terrorists and their supporters, close quote, said one FBI veteran familiar with recent and ongoing cases, including CAIR officials. Read the whole article for yourself. And then, you know what? Get back to me. You may find out that I was right all along and you were wrong all along. And I realize most of you, like myself, don't like to admit we're wrong. Nobody likes to admit that they were wrong. But you can have a mea culpa simply by learning for yourself what's going on and what's at stake. There's also on my website a very important chart, and that is a chart on the number of hate crimes in America against different religious groups. And we learn through new FBI data on hate crimes that despite all the protestations to the contrary, the discrimination against Muslims actually accounts for only a fraction of total religious crimes. The largest number of hate crimes by religious motivation in 2006 were against Jews, not against Muslims. But that doesn't stop people from screaming racism in a crowded nation, does it? When I return. Up next is an incredible interview I did earlier today with Dr. Daniel Carlett. He's a medical doctor. I believe he's an orthopedic surgeon who, for a very brief while, took a position touting medications for a pharmaceutical firm. And he's going to talk about how they try to seduce him down the primrose path with all sorts of inducements and payments, and how many of our doctors are outright prostitutes. And for very low prices, by the way, you're going to find this out. For very low prices, doctors will prostitute themselves and tout the benefits of drugs that are actually harmful. And it's very important you listen to this interview. I read the article a few weeks ago, and I knew I had to get Dr. Carlett in front of a microphone. He's going to be here for you in a few seconds, actually a few minutes, on the Savage Nation. You have to be here. I'll be back.
Savage.
We know that the drug industry has been trying to poison our children and us for decades, not on purpose, but by accident. And now we're beginning to see just how corrupt some of these companies may be. On the line with me is Dr. Daniel Carlett, who wrote an expose on this subject for the New York Times. Dr. Carlett, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks very much for having me on today.
In your great article, Dr. Drug Rep, you outlined your involvement with the pharmaceutical industry and how you made drug pitches for them. Tell us, how did you first get involved in that process?
Well, a drug rep came to my office, as they often do. This is somebody from Wyeth Pharmaceuticals who I already knew because he had been giving me samples of Effexor. And he came and he invited me to give talks to other doctors. And he said that I would go to what were called lunch and learn talks, where you go to a physician's office, usually a primary care doctor's office, and you go with the drug rep and you talk about the product. And in this case, the product is an antidepressant called Effexor or Effexor XR. And he invited me to do this. He invited me to go down to New York to a conference, which would be all expenses paid. And I decided that I would do it because Effexor is an effective antidepressant. I figured I could provide some medical education to doctors and worse comes to worse, doctors might end up prescribing a little bit more Effexor, but that wouldn't be so bad because there was some evidence saying that Effexor might actually be a little bit more effective than some of the other antidepressants.
You mentioned detailing in your story. What is detailing? What does the word mean in the context of the pharmaceutical industry?
Well, detailing, it's the term used to describe sales visits, essentially, by drug reps, where drug reps go to doctors' offices and they describe in detail the benefits of the drug that they're trying to sell. And the other meaning of the word detailing that I discovered as a result of giving these talks is that the drug reps can learn a whole lot of detail about the prescribing habits of physicians that they're visiting. And they do that by purchasing this information from pharmacies. So, and this is something that I was completely in the dark about, and a lot of doctors continue to be in the dark about, although some had been educated by this article. But the process is called prescription data mining. And this information is sold by pharmacies to drug companies. And then the drug companies will be able to give a printout to the drug rep saying, Dr. X prescribes 20% Prozac, 24% Paxil, and only 6% Effexor. So we have to really try to encourage this doctor to prescribe more Effexor because he's not prescribing enough of it.
I was fascinated by the way you described how they talk about the doctors and how they have basically a rating system for the doctors. It's unbelievable. Will you take us into that?
Well, there are terms that are used by drug reps to describe doctors who are high-volume prescribers. The term that I heard was decile, D-E-C-I-L-E, and it goes from decile 1 to decile 10. And the very highest volume prescribers are decile 10, and the lowest volume prescribers are decile 1. And as a drug rep, obviously, you want to target doctors that are in the higher deciles, because the more prescriptions a doctor writes, the more possibility you have of making a big bonus by encouraging that doctor to write more of your medication. So part of the drug detailing that they do is they determine first what decile level a doctor is at, and secondly, how much of their medication they're prescribing and how much of their competitor's medication they're prescribing. And then armed with that information, they can then use that to target their marketing pitch according to what sort of competition they're working against.
So from this initial talk that you gave, where did it go from there? How did your involvement continue, and how did your perception change over time?
Well, as a result of the conference in New York, I became part of Wyeth Pharmaceuticals Speakers Bureau. And that meant that I was allowed to go with the drug reps to doctors' offices, and I would be paid between $500 and $750 per talk, depending on how far away from my home office it was. So essentially, what I did when I got back from New York, I already had a few invitations waiting for me, and the reps would tell me where to go, and I would meet them at a primary care doctor's office, and I would walk in there with the rep, who usually would be bringing a nice catered lunch. We would walk into the conference room, and I would introduce myself to the doctors that were there, and I would begin my talk. And then my talk, at least from the doctor's perspective, my talk was a medical education talk about how to treat depression, because most of the depression treatment in the U.S. is by primary care doctors rather than by psychiatrists. But from the standpoint of the drug company, what they were hoping is that I would tilt my presentation in favor of Effexor, and I would spend more time talking about the benefits of Effexor, relatively little time talking about any of the negative side effects of Effexor. And their hope is that a week or two after I left that doctor's office, they would be able to look at all that data that they get from the pharmacies and see that Dr. X had, in fact, increased his or her prescribing of Effexor as a result of my talk. Well, I think just the very fact that I was going in here with drug reps and that I was considered by the staff to be essentially a sidekick to the drug reps in itself was more uncomfortable than I realized it would be when I signed up for this gig. But I think one of the things that was particularly uncomfortable was one talk I remember where I was discussing the well-known side effect of hypertension, which can be caused by Effexor. And I was talking about the company line, which is that the hypertension is only a real issue when you get to very high doses. But one of the psychiatrists that was listening to me said that in his experience, that wasn't really true, that he had seen high blood pressure even at low or normal doses of Effexor. And, of course, I took out my studies to show him that the data supported what I was saying. But still, I remember him looking at me with this skeptical, almost contemptuous expression on his face. And at that point, I really felt sleazy. I felt like I was no longer a psychiatrist providing unbiased medical education, but what I really was a glorified drug rep. And it was soon after that that I quit. There were a few other talks that I gave and some other events that happened, but that was sort of the road to my deciding that I had stepped over kind of an ethical line here and that I could no longer do it.
How many other doctors engage in exactly what you were doing? How pervasive is this?
Well, Michael, it's pretty pervasive. We don't know exactly how many doctors do it, but there was a recent study in the New England Journal of Medicine where they sampled doctors all over the country and found that over 25% of all doctors in the United States either give these kinds of talks or are consultants for drug companies or do clinical trials to help the drug companies market their drugs. And if you take that figure at face value, we're talking about somewhere in the range of 200,000 doctors doing these types of promotional activities for drug companies in the United States.
Wow, that's an amazing number. To what extent do you think these doctors see what you eventually saw in terms of the ethical dilemma that they are a part of?
Well, rationalization is a very powerful thing, and money is a very powerful thing. So if you're a doctor giving these talks and you're making thousands and thousands of dollars of extra money a year just for driving to a doctor's office and chatting with some doctors, it's going to be very hard for you to realize that what you're doing may be unethical. And you may say to yourself and to others that you only talk in favor of drugs that you're already in favor of, and that the money is not swaying your opinion, and that you're only telling the truth based on the studies. But my concern is that it's a slippery slope. And if later on you find out that a study says that the drug you've been making so much money from actually has some terrible side effect, how likely is it for you to emphasize that side effect in your talks to doctors? I think that that's the real issue. How is that you're going to is the potential that the money that you're making is going to continue to make you tempted to tweak the truth or only give an edited version of the truth about a certain drug? It's up to doctors to not accept money from drug companies to do these kinds of educational events. This is not something that we're going to be able to legislate against. I don't think that we can or should come up with laws forbidding drug companies from advertising their drugs and from paying doctors to give talks. But I think it's really up to each individual doctor to look inside themselves and look at their own sense of morality and decide whether this is the right thing for them to be doing.
Dr. Carlatt, my hat off to you. Thank you very much for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, it was great speaking with you. Thanks very much.
Razor has co-written an awfully important book with Robert Bauman. It's called Betraying Our Troops, The Destructive Results of Privatizing War. She's agreed to come answer some of my questions. Dina, hello.
Thanks for having me on, Michael. I look forward to talking to you.
Our troops seem to be severely underfunded. We continue to hear Bush ask us for more money for our troops, yet the government is spending many of those billions on private contracts. But that money is often misappropriated as well. What can you tell us about this black hole our tax dollars disappear into when we think they're going for the war?
It doesn't seem to matter how much money the Congress throws at this war. We constantly hear soldiers doing without body armor, ammunition, up-armored Humvees, the kinds of things they need to fight. When this war first started, the money that was given to the Pentagon was considered colorless money. You appropriate it where you need it for this war. But because the contractor billings, how much the contractors are billing us, have become so out of control with so little oversight, they suck the money from all areas. So as a result, even though this is the most expensive war in history, we keep spending more and more money, and people can't understand. How can it be our soldiers are doing without? And the bottom line is the contractor billings. They are running up the costs, and what they do is run up the cost on the first contract. That becomes the new normal. Then they turn around, and when we have a follow-on contract or follow-on task order, they run that up. That becomes the new base. So there is an enormous amount of fat and fraud built in. Till we get control of the contractor's billings, there'll never be enough money for this war for anything.
Every single week, it seems the president is pressuring Congress for more and more money for our troops. Please fund the troops. This is something we need for the troops. Help protect our troops. This money is not going to the troops. It's going to contractors. Are they lying to us?
Well, that's one of the reasons that I wrote this book, is my extreme frustration that they use this fund the troops kind of rhetoric. The generals and everyone else in this war have stuck themselves like glue to the troops. But the troops were coming back, and they were starting to email me and tell me, even when they were in Iraq, we can't get the contractors to get us the kind of food and water we need as soon as we leave a base. KBR was, according to their task order, was supposed to supply food and water to everyone who was within 400 kilometers of major bases. And yet, what I found is if you weren't near one of these big bases, you went without. You didn't have enough food, water, supplies, because KBR just refused to go out. It was too dangerous. For example, in our book, they had to scrounge for food and drink their shower water, and it was just a shameful situation. This is one of the Achilles heel problems of having contractors. And that is, contractors can just say no. They just basically say, we're not doing that task, it's too dangerous. And the only recourse, the commander, or whoever is trying to oversee them, or whoever needs the supplies, has, is to go back to the U.S. and start a breach contract.
Now, I want to go into how their employees are treated. KBR, among others, have many employees who come home injured before they make $50,000. In many cases, these employees are also neglected by their companies once they're back home in the U.S., their insurance claims are either neglected or simply denied. So this money for the troops, but actually being spent on contractors, is eaten up by these companies before the contractors are even taken care of.
Yeah, but you know what they do is they tell you, oh, you go there, you get this money tax-free, they promise you all this stuff. But unless you're there for 360-some days, it isn't tax-free. And what I found is two things. One, people get injured, and then they just send you home and leave you. The second thing is that you start saying, hey, you know, we're not feeding the soldiers like we're supposed to, or we're not doing this for the soldiers, and we are supposed to be doing this, and because a lot of these guys are retired military, are saying, you know, I got to do this for the troops. And they can just fire you and send you home. And then suddenly, if you make noise, if you as an employee make noise and make trouble, you send home before that time, you have to pay taxes. One of the truck drivers in our book who made a stink because things weren't right and things weren't fair, they sent him home and he had to pay another $15,000 in taxes.
In the book, you talk about the KBR Houston orientation before the war began. They had an emphasis on the money. They said, quote, this is the easiest money you'll ever make, close quote. If you get frustrated, just remember the money. Remember, we are a for-profit group. Wow.
Yeah, well, that was probably the most astounding story I heard when I first started, is this kind of PR thing where you at least mask it or put on some pseudo-patriotism, not KBR. And the truck drivers told me they were just amazed. First of all, they were at a five-star hotel, which, of course, is taxpayer-paid. But the second of all is that they had them chant over and over again in these motivational speakers. I said, you're not going to Iraq to help the American soldiers. You're not going to Iraq for America. You're not going to Iraq for this. You're not going to Iraq for that. You're going to Iraq to make money. You're going to make lots of money. That's what we're here for. We're here to make money. That's our goal. And then they'd have them chant, for the money, for the money. And I would think that they would try to, like, sugarcoat it a little, you know, like, you know, maybe say we're going to help our soldiers and we're true blue Americans. No, they didn't want them to. They guess they realized that once it got nasty there, that a lot of the patriotic feelings would probably disappear. And they wanted these guys to feel like you're going to, you know, it's worth driving a truck with minimal army protection and no gun in case somebody comes to try to shoot you because you're going to have a big paycheck and your wife's going to be really happy. But one of the things that happened that blew a lot of that out, a lot of that orientation out of the system, was when Tommy Hamill, the KBR truck driver, got kidnapped. If everybody remembers, he was, you know, in a car and they had a gun to his head and all that kind of stuff. Well, what happened there, and that was early on in the war, well, a lot of these American truck drivers quit and came home. I'm sure their wives got on the phone and said, get out of there. And that is one of the problems with using contractors instead of using military truck drivers. They just quit and leave. And they did. And they didn't have enough truck drivers. And there was 1,000 trucks stuck on the Kuwaiti borders and people not willing to drive and not willing to go in. And they had, the Army had to start rationing food and everything else. You cannot put your supply chain, your vital trucking supply chain, in the hands of a private contractor with employees who can quit.
But this used to be something the military did within its own means.
Absolutely. The military truck drivers used to do this. The military truck drivers, one, knew how to drive in hostile areas. They were trained. Number two, they had a gun. And number three, they couldn't just say, I'm going home, because they were under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. They said, you know, Sarge, it's too dangerous to drive over that hill. I really don't want to do that. And the sergeant said, well, you either drive over the hill or you go to jail.
Fundamentally, there seems to be a problem here. Because under U.S. law, these companies are required to turn a profit for their stockholders. So unequivocally, money is their number one priority, not our safety, not our country, not winning the war.
Right. Well, here's the problem. The problem is that you're right. According to the stockholders and the law, they're supposed to be maximizing the profits for the stockholders. You know, you could bring a stockholder suit if they didn't. And the bottom line is that is incompatible with the battlefield. It's incompatible because the battlefield situation has, and the military situation has, a very different goal, and that is do everything against your self-interest to defeat the enemy. And that's why you have the Uniform Code of Military Justice, by the way, because you're asking people to do things against their own self-interest in order to win. Now, as far as the billings are concerned, this is one of the things I'm talking about. They would KBR was telling their employees to bill 84 hours a week no matter what. And what happened is everybody was billing 84 hours a week, and some people were working then and some people weren't. And so as a result, these billings are huge, because you got to think about this. This, you know, KBR is reported to be billing $500 million a month. And that's breathtaking. But think about it. They don't have a big plant, a manufacturing plant. They're not buying titanium and exotic metals to bend metal and make a fighter jet. They don't have a big, huge retirement fund. They don't have any of this stuff that normally sucks up money. They are basically a service industry. The majority of money is going towards salaries and wages. And so as a result, they're marking, if for every hour some guy works 84 hours, they mark up on overhead, you know, all the different things they layer on. And this is how you get up to $500 million a month. And this is how you get up to, this war is going to end up being one of the most expensive in constant dollars. And there was recently a report that came out of the Center for Public Integrity. From 2004 to 2006, the contractor amounts have gone up 50% a year.
Okay, so we know there is very little oversight for these companies operating in Iraq. And when we try to attempt enforcement tactics, the supervisors come back to us with their finger in their nose saying they don't know what to oversee. This is our first time. We've never done this before. We don't know what to look for. Why, in your opinion, is this happening?
Well, and that's part of the problem. Part of the problem is that a lot of this stuff is done in a hostile area, and you can't have a lot of oversight people just hanging around in a hostile area. And so, as a result, you got these cost-plus contracts, which are known in the Pentagon as rob-me contracts. And you don't have anybody sitting over them and enough auditors, investigators overseeing it, because it's a war situation. So as a result, they're taking advantage of it. They're telling, the companies are billing, and they're telling the government, pay this, pay this, pay this. They're not definitizing the contract. They're not saying, these are our set costs, this is how much it's going to be, or this is it. It's just like an open faucet. And so as a result, the billings are huge. And one of the things that we have, even the very first story in our book, in our introduction, is that KBR was billing so much that their bills got way out there, and it took, the government was trying to scrub the numbers, and the government was saying, we can't directly pay you because your billings are so outrageous, we got to look at these. And so the government was slow to pay. So KBR started, in the middle of a battlefield situation, they started going in a revolving way, not a one-time thing. They started saying to the generals of these bases, call Washington and get us paid, because if you don't get us paid, our guys aren't coming out of the trailer. And a work stoppage in a war situation. Now, legally, they had a right to do that. That's the ironic thing, because these procurement rules were not built for contractors to be in a war. They were built for the nice, calm, you know, daily contracting kind of thing. And so as a result, you have work stoppages. And what my biggest disappointment in this whole thing is that apparently all these generals caved and didn't report this and didn't push back, and the civilians in the army caved and paid this money. They can't afford it. But what I don't understand is why in the heck wouldn't they have gone to the top levels of the Pentagon and say, if you don't do something about this and get these companies under control for us, we're going to go to the Congress. It was a Republican Congress. They could have gone around and saying, we're being blackmailed by the companies. Now, how well do you think that would go over? Or one of them resign and protest and go to the press. Can you imagine the uproar against KBR if they knew that they were trying to blackmail, not feeding the soldiers because they weren't being paid in the middle of a war? It's really sad. And my website is www.followthemoneyproject.org.
Dina Razor, unbelievable. Thank you for being with the Savage Nation today. The book is Betraying Our Troops.
Thanks for having me on, Michael. I really appreciate it.
Savage.
It is Michael Savage. There are so many big stories. Here's a little one. Hillary Clinton and Rudy Giuliani are fading. They're slipping in the crucial poll. I wonder why they're slipping. As I said to you, this was a grotesque error on the part of the two-party system. That is, holding these the so-called debates 2 years ahead of an election. Now we're down to, what, a year or whatever. They thought that the more you saw the candidates, the more you'd be interested in the election. Well, the exact opposite is happening, which is that the more you see them, the less you like them. That is the leading candidates. The more we see them, the more we see through them. Now, whether this is good for democracy or bad, I don't know. Another story that's a very good story is that there's great joy in Venezuela now that Jimmy Carter's favorite dictator has lost in his attempt to become a lifetime dictator, Hugo Chavez. Of course, that's not for long. Internet kid porn explodes in Colorado. That's right. The number of federal cases filed in Colorado has tripled in 1 year. In 1 year. And who are they catching? A former sheriff's deputy, the son of a Weld County judge, a concert pianist, and even a self-professed child advocate have been prosecuted this year by the U.S. Attorney's Office for possessing, trading, and distributing child pornography online. Good. Put him away for 25 years. Cupertino man gets 2 years for exporting military technology to China. Really shocking. Philip Chang, age 60, was sentenced to 2 years in federal prison for illegally exporting night vision technology to China that could be used for military purposes. Now, I'm sure it's an evil fascist government that caught Mr. Chang. I'm sure that those night vision goggles were going to be used by the Chinese for viewing the Great Wall of China at night, not for military purposes. Car called Turnstile for Terrorist Suspects. That's on WorldNet Daily. You must read it. It's an 11-page article. You must download it. You must forward it to everybody you know. CAIR is being called a turnstile for terrorist suspects. It was reported today on WorldNet Daily, and they list them. Here's the long list. Muthana Al-Hanoudi, Laura Jiglit, Nihad Awad, Abdurraham Al-Moudi, Omar Ahmad, Nabil Sadoun, Mohammed Namir, Rafiq Jabir, Rabith Hadid, Siraj Wahaj, Randall Royer, Bassam Kafagi, Ghassan Elashi, Hamza Youssef. Well, I know these names are not household words. It's not like Britney Spears or anything like that. But these are all either CARE officials, founding directors, etc., all of whom are on a new rogues list put out by WorldNet Daily. And if you don't like me and you like them, then you better look in the mirror, because I have a feeling that there's a hidden swastika emerging from the lemon juice on your forehead. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. MichaelSavage.com is the website. And when I say it's the website, that means you better go on it. And why do I say you better go on it? Because I'm sorry, the stories are not appearing in the newspapers. You're living in a dream world here. Instead, you're seeing rubbish in the New York Times saying that Iran, who we were told for 5 years by the intelligence agencies, was developing a nuclear weapon. The same agencies are now saying they have evidence that they're not developing a weapon. Now, when are you going to believe them? You're going to believe the intelligence agencies for the last 5 years or last night when they realized that, A, the surge is working, and, B, they need a new campaign against Republicans, and it may as well be Iran. I mean, who are you going to believe? your brains or your DNC. So that's it. Radio star Michael Savage sues Islamic group. That's on michaelsavage.com. Protect freedom of speech. Click to support the Michael Savage Legal Defense Fund. Savage fights back. The lawsuit is there. We're getting a lot of lawyers, by the way, writing to my lawyer, saying it's a brilliant, brilliant lawsuit. And the biggest surprise of the day for me was that a young lady on Fox News dared to break the handcuffs that have been put around the people, the cowards on Fox News, and dare to talk not only about Michael Savage positively, but about CAIR negatively and about the lawsuit positively. I don't know how she got around Wallbanger and O'Reilly, but truthfully, it's an embarrassment for them that they won't talk about the biggest story in talk radio and put aside their own petty jealousies and understand that they're next if they don't support me. But she did. That's the good news. And I really enjoyed hearing it today from the young lady. And we'll play it again tomorrow on the Savage Nation. It's the Fox News story and the lawsuit filed by Michael Savage to defend his career and himself. U.S. intel possibly duped by Iran came out on Newsmax today by Kenneth Timmerman. It's a must read. This is a big story, a very, very big story, which is that the Christian population in Palestinian-controlled areas could disappear in 15 years. Now, we understand that Islam is a religion of peace. We understand that the Quran is a book of peace. But we can't understand why, if those two statements are true, Christians are being driven out of Palestinian-controlled areas. We don't understand it. Somehow our logic doesn't seem to work. An atheist, the pockmarked fool, is looking to remove under God from the Pledge of Allegiance and the currency. One man, one pocked face, one rotten adolescence, and this man is seeking to remove under God from the Pledge of Allegiance and U.S. currency. That's America, where the courts can be manipulated by one psycho. And if you think that's bad, it gets worse. Barbaric, multiculturalist anthropologists from Africa who have been mutilated genitally in their home psycho countries are defending female genital mutilation at a forthcoming anthropology conference. That's right. Crazy wacko women from Africa are now pushing female genital mutilation at academic conferences with feminists' silence. This is the Savage Nation. Wake up before it's too late.
Savage.